It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here, as usual, in living color and full of just all kinds of information that we can't wait to share with people. There's never, ever a dull moment in this business, it seems, and in this country lately, it seems the same way. So if you're a regular, welcome back. Thanks so much for always being there. We depend on you, of course. And if you're new to the show, by accident or on purpose, one way or the other, try to stick around for the whole hour. And I promise you, you will go away knowing something you didn't know before. In fact, I already gave Angela a little tip today. So she's already learned something, and we just weren't even started yet. How about that?
That's a good start.
I was practicing. Anyway, we got all kinds of topics today. There's, as usual, lots going on in the market. There's lots going on in the politics of money and the money of politics and all those things. And we'll have a trivia question, as usual, after the first break. And you just never know. We'll talk about anything we want to talk about, unless you decide to change the course. And all you got to do that is pick up a phone, dial 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK. Callers will always be placed in immediate priority, and you can actually change the subject to whatever you'd like to talk about. So whether your questions are personal finance or investing or anything you can think of, try us out. What fun is live radio unless you do some of it live and interact, right? I always rail against the people who pre-record these things and put them on because the callers then have no chance to question anything. But enough of that. Let's talk about the market. And those of you who tuned in a couple minutes early heard that we gave Howard the thumbs up, which he passed along because it was a pretty acceptable week overall.
Yeah, it wasn't very eventful. The gains were small, and they mostly
short, by the way,
came
too.
On Friday.
One of the reasons.
Yeah, that's true. And also, we're into summer now, and vacations start, and the volumes usually go down, and it's usually a lot less volatile until we get to the end of the summer when the traders return, and then we see the return of volatility. So
they look and say, oh my God, what have I done?
Right. Well, I haven't been paying attention at all. I need to do some stuff.
Yep.
And that's basically what we saw this week. But it was nice to see the market rally. The futures were down on Friday morning, and then the jobs report came out, and the market turned around. And that's the kind of trading we do like to see when positive economic reports coincide with gains in the market. That's usually a good thing. It really bothers me when positive economic reports make people sell off because they're worried about what the Fed will do. Really annoying, but that's been off and on the trend over the last 10 years. And
all news is good news sometimes. Yeah. All news is bad news sometimes. And once in a great while, they take it for what it's worth.
Yep, and that's what happened.
This was up for what it's worth week, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Even though the headline number missed, it was still a pretty big number.
You also have to figure out what it missed.
Right. You have to figure out what it missed and why the expectations were higher, and there's a bunch of different things. And then the ADP report, which we'll get to in a bit, looks really strong. So
very strong.
So, yeah, all in all, pretty good week. All three indexes were up between 0.5% and 0.7%. For the year, the Dow's now up more than 13%, the S&P more than 12%, and the NASDAQ's trailing a little bit but still up by 7%. And a lot of that is just the NASDAQ is tech-heavy. Tech has been out of favor this year. And, again, tech is one of those that sold off on good news because of the worries about interest rates rising. So
finished up the week with a bang, though.
It really did. And the NASDAQ being up 7% this year is really not bad. I'll take that. That's a pretty good gain considering it's coming off of a – what was it last year? It was a 43.6% gain. So,
yeah, and it even snuck into the green numbers for the month and for the quarter.
That's right. There was actually no red on my report here.
So, prettiest colors ever.
Yep. One of the reasons that the Dow did so well this week was energy. It led the way higher once again. The S&P, actually, is what I meant to say, did so well this week. It was energy. It rose almost 7% this week, and oil prices are approaching $70 a barrel. Yay. What a difference.
About time, isn't it?
What a difference a new administration can make. We went from,
Trump
Well,
kept oil prices down, so they were giving gasoline away.
I always say that people give assign a lot more power to the president to control energy prices than they actually have. But in this case, the policies that President Biden is doing are directly opposed to what President Trump was doing, and the effect is, I mean, it's directly correlated
to
the price of oil.
They can't be too low. They just can't. It's self-correcting. If people can't make any money by producing them, then they will rise because people will stop producing. It's when it's artificially stopped that we get into trouble.
Yeah, and that's what we're seeing now. Yep. And that happens to coincide with demand shooting through the roof as the world reopens after COVID. So those two things together are really driving oil prices up. And so I hope we don't see $100 a barrel again, but I wouldn't put it out of the range of possibilities.
I would not put it out of the range. I don't know for sure. I couldn't call you wrong.
No, I'm not saying it'll happen, but I'm definitely not saying it won't happen. So
I love the 65 to 75 range, even though it might seem a little higher at the pump than it needs to. It's still better for producers, and it's better for the overall supply mechanism and so on. And especially without that pipeline getting finished, we found out what a shortage there are of truck drivers over the last couple months. And that is not a good thing. I got a little more to say on that later, too.
That whole pipeline thing is purely political. There's nothing
100%.
There's nothing wrong with the pipeline. We're using pipelines every day. We saw what happens when one goes down. It's disastrous. And so adding another one would actually be a better way than trucking all this oil. But it's such a political landmine that's why it got canceled.
Yeah, if you ever want to get shocked, just Google this. How many miles of pipelines are there in the U.S.? And I promise you, you will be astounded.
Astronomical, yeah. So the one thing that all this has been good for is energy stocks. Energy is now up almost 50% this year as a sector. No other sector is even close to that. Financials are the next best performer, and they're up in the 30% range, and they were up only 1.2% versus 7% for energy during the week. Healthcare and consumer discretionary both down more than 1%. Outside of the U.S., Brazil had a huge week, gained 7%. India also did well, gaining over 2%. And then China and Hong Kong were two of the only losers this week. But despite that, the gains in India and Brazil pushed the emerging markets index up over 2%. So a little bit of a rally there this week. Spain lost a little bit. But outside of that, pretty much everyone else was in the green. Commodities continued to rally, gained 2.6% for the week, and they're now up almost 30% this year. A lot of that's driven by the price of oil, obviously. Gold and silver posted small weekly drops, and a large drop in interest rates on Friday left the bond market slightly positive for the week. That was interesting to see. The interest rates have really been hovering since in the first quarter, they did nothing but shoot up. And then after that, they've really leveled off and are kind of it's almost like they're indecisive about which way they want to go next. I think this period of consolidation is probably healthy and will probably stick around for a while.
Not just in interest rates, but in a lot of things, I believe. There's some inflationary things, pressures and results and contributors and that sort of thing that I want to talk about a little bit when we come back, too. So we'll wrap up the market for the week in a few seconds. I'll give out the very interesting trivia question this week. And I usually don't pat myself on the back till after the question, but I'll start it this way. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question. I want to talk a little bit about jobs and so on. So I came up with a jobs number. A lot of you probably know Facebook owns Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty common knowledge, isn't it? Do you remember what year they bought it?
I don't.
2012. Okay. Do you remember what they paid?
I don't.
A cool billion.
Okay.
How many employees did Instagram have that day?
Good question.
Isn't that a good question? All right. Back to jobs in the market a little bit. This was jobs week, as we said. ADP started out really well, and then the government job came in with a miss, although a lot of us did think it'd be closer to a million. But then on the household survey from BLS, The number came in at 444, which was pretty sharply lower than the other two. But what we always need to remember in these things is that there's a seasonal adjustment made to those numbers by the BLS. And this is a historical good time for getting hired. So the actual number of jobs is always interesting, too. And if you remember the big disappointment of a month ago when the number came in, the 220s, I think it was, or 250s, somewhere in there, way, way, way less than expected. Well, the actual jobs, non-seasonally adjusted jobs, that month were about 1,038,000. Well, this month it was just under 1,000,000. So don't think that these things aren't happening. They are. It's just part of a natural pattern, so the adjustments are hard to estimate. But the thing I told Angela on the way out today, and I think everybody would be surprised by this, we know that a little over half of the states now have said no to the $300 a week for the additional unemployment compensation that the federal government is doing. But there's a little catch in that. It hasn't taken place yet. Florida is one of the opt-out states, but we don't opt out until June 26th.
No, I didn't realize that.
So if you're looking at a lot of help wanted signs for the next 4 weeks, don't be shocked. But after that, I'll bet you're going to find them going down real, real quickly, because the extra payment, the one that puts it over the top as to whether it's more profitable to work or not, after that it goes away.
Interesting. I didn't realize.
No, I didn't either. I can't even remember what caught my eye on that, but I heard something that kind of gave me a start, and I had to look it up to see. And wow, so things are booming, and they will boom better.
There's something else that's booming, too, and that is directly related to what you were just talking about. The half the jobs that were created in the headline number of 559,000 jobs that was shown on Friday to be created were in leisure and hospitality.
Yeah.
And they also happens to be the place that's seeing massive labor shortages. So what's skyrocketing in that sector is wages.
Yep.
In that sector, there has been a 16.8% increase in annual pay. That's an annualized number. But that happened in just the last 6 months. That's the fastest the wages in that industry have ever risen in the history of it being tracked. So
and
people
speaking
are desperate
of inflation,
for employees.
Yes.
Yeah.
Inflation is going to continue to be a push and a pull for the short run anyway. I asked Adam if he had seen what tips were doing. Most of you know that we like, at certain times of the cycle, and especially right now, we like the Treasury inflation-protected bonds. I like to buy them in the iShare with the label TIP because it's convenient, it's easy to get in and out. They pay monthly and all that stuff. But the TIP spent a lot of the last 2 or 3 years paying nothing or tiny little amounts. It has been ramping up lately because it's indexed to inflation, which is ramping up lately, and they're unable to hide it the way they used to. So this month, it's 68 cents, and it was about 50 cents last month. Well, 68 cents is the highest tips have paid since June of 2012. That was 80 cents. So if you think tip return is looking pretty good right now, you're right.
Yeah, simple. But they're expensive right now, too.
They are expensive. Yeah, you're having to put up with that. But yeah, those of us who've owned them a long time and have been patiently waiting are smiling all the way to the bank right at the moment.
Definitely. The manufacturing and non-manufacturing PMI reports were released this week, and they both showed really strong readings. Specifically, the non-manufacturing report, it came in at a 64. It's the highest level on record going back to 1997. It's not surprising because that's where, as lockdowns ease across the country, sorry, Michigan, and the U.S. is reopening, except for Michigan, that's where all the jobs are coming back and people are ramping up restaurants that have been shut down or limited to takeout and delivery only. So those numbers will probably continue to stay strong throughout the summer and maybe even into the fall. The non-manufacturing report is by far the more important of the two. The service sector is so much larger than the manufacturing sector, but the manufacturing sector also had a very good month, came in at a 61, very strong number, not an all-time record, but still anything above 50 signals growth. So a 61 signals a lot of growth, and that's good to see.
Couple little caution signs that I picked out of the reports this morning. Teenage unemployment is dropping like a rock. And that's indicative of one thing. Adults aren't taking jobs that are available. And we're just talking about one of the main reasons why is that extra $300 in unemployment. Well, that's going to go away. But meanwhile, your teenagers are making a lot of money working and thankfully filling in some gaps that the adults aren't helping with. The other thing that caught my eye that I did not like, the bullish sentiment has now dropped below 20%.
Ah, there's a caveat.
There is a caveat, I know, and I'll let you explain it.
Yeah, so normally if you listen to the show, we don't like to see bullish sentiment get too high. That means that the general public is excited about the market, and that's typically right before everything crashes. And on the opposite side, bearish sentiment is when people are very pessimistic about the market. So when that goes up, it's a contrarian indicator that usually means the stock market is poised to do well. So this week, bearish sentiment, the pessimistic indicator, dropped under 20% for the first time in almost a year. And normally we would be a little bit scared about that. Yep. But because it dropped so low, historically, when that happens, the market actually performs well over the next 6 months. Not as well as the average, but it still goes up almost every time. So it's not as bad of an indicator as it normally is.
No, and there's a good reason for that, too. If you dig deep enough into all of these things, the reason that happens is because the market's up so much in the first 5 months. So with that kind of momentum, people lose their fear. The bearish sentiment goes down. The bullish sentiment goes up. People get in. And it's okay as long as we keep our momentum.
Yeah. You can't have a shock to the system at this point, which is always a threat. But if everything continues to go well with the reopening and COVID doesn't rear up again, which I don't think it will, it should be a good year.
Yes. And the financial politics of the world are rearing their ugly head as usual as they're trying to come together on this infrastructure bill that's done everything, including redefine the word infrastructure. It's been whittled down now from a starting point of about $2.4 trillion down to about $1.4 trillion. And my rhetorical question to everybody in D.C. is, why do you think we need more stimulus? We can't hire enough people to fill the jobs we've got. What's the Joel said? About 8.2 million?
Yeah, something like it was over 8 million.
Way, way more than the people who are still looking for a job. There are jobs available. If they start trying to push this thing any harder, that inflationary cycle could become a real, real problem for people. In many, many respects, it still is.
Yeah.
It already is.
It definitely the big debate going on right now is the inflation going to persist for good, or is it just a flash in the pan because we're 1 year removed from such a the COVID shock to the system? And I think there's valid points on both sides of the argument, and the answer is probably somewhere in between the two. I don't think we're going to see these crazy inflation numbers that we've been seeing for the last 2 months, but
there will be some price rollbacks on the very volatile commodities, but
absolutely,
that always happens.
I mean, you talk about the price of lumber.
That's the biggie.
Yeah, and even to some degree, the price of oil after we get through the summer and the busy driving season, things like that, I think you'll see some of that come down. But some of things are going to persist.
Where it's here to stay, in my opinion, food and beverage.
Yes. Yeah.
Think about this. 10% of the cost of the food you buy in the grocery store or anywhere else is transportation.
Yep.
And then there's a big component of labor in it. What are the things that are expensive? Well, transportation, labor, there's shortages of this and that. I think you're going to see a real ugly, ugly time in the grocery stores. It's already kind of disgusting. But I've also noticed, Sarah and I have been really paying attention to all this recently, partly because of all the high prices of things. But if you're careful nowadays, if you shop the sales and don't mind going to different places if you have to, there are some bargains out there, unlike pretty much anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's funny how some price increases, some on certain sectors are very sticky, and certain sectors are very volatile. So
yeah,
when you talk about the price of oil, it's volatile. But when you talk about the price of healthcare, you talk about the price of food, once things go up, they don't tend to come back down.
Nope.
I rarely do you see the price of anything in healthcare come down.
Very, very seldom. But we'll see when it gets a little further into this if the whole cycle does wind down a bit. I am not putting my money on it. I'm staying in the inflation arenas, which are the tips in the real estate and the broad market, which loves it. There are a lot of things you can do to help yourself. When you can't save a bunch more money, the secret is to make a bunch more money. Or as they say in the old country, the best revenge is to make a boatload of money. And I agree with that. And I'm not promising people that if you become a client, you'll make one, but at least we'll cut your fear a little bit.
Get you on the right track.
Yeah. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Oh.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have our trivia question open, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Kenny at 904-636-7888. Back in 2012, Facebook bought Instagram for a cool $1 billion. I think kind of every kid who starts a company and wants to sell out to a Facebook or something has that magic billion number in mind. Well, this guy got it. How many employees did Instagram have when the sale was consummated? You'll be surprised. Couple of fun facts on inflation. Adam and I are just going over some of these. It's really getting noticeable in many respects, but maybe none so much as for retirement. And those of you who were listening last week and heard Elizabeth Cabbage, our long-term care expert, the reason that we concern ourselves with long-term care and long-term care insurance is that it can rob your retirement funds, and it can do it really in less time than you think.
Healthcare expenses in retirement can drain your accounts faster than just about any other type of event.
You know what the average retiree spends on healthcare in a year without including long-term care? You'd be surprised.
I don't know.
$4,500.
Yeah, seems about right.
Yeah, I thought, gee, that's cheap. But then you look at the long-term care thing, and you've got about a 70% chance of needing it at some point. But back, I was born in 1950, and the best number we have starts in 1955. And in 1955, the average wage was about $2,800 a year, which seems a little unbelievable. And the cost to retire is $28,000 a year. Well, gee, that's not hard, right? So by 1969, when I was getting into college and such, the average wage was up to $5,200, and the cost to retire at $52,000. Well, that seems pretty doable also, right? So you get up to about 1987 when the big tax law change came, and the wage went up to $13,700, and the cost to retire is $138,000. Well, then you get up a few more bumps. 2019, a couple of years ago, average wage $35,000, cost to retire $357,000. Now, that is something of a bump from 1987 when it was $137,000, jumps to $350,000, almost $357,000. And now, 2 years after that one, average wage $54,000, cost to retire $541,000. Now, if you're spending $4,500 as a retired person on health care, and all of a sudden you got to add $106,000 for long-term care, you're going to drain your retirement. Good morning. I'm sorry I don't have a name.
Greg.
Hey, Greg. How are you?
Good. How are you today? I figured maybe you guys would have been at the Bitcoin confab in Miami this weekend, broadcasting there, helping to promote the sagging Bitcoin prices.
Well, don't think we haven't been talking about it at the break.
Yeah, we were going to do that, but then Elon Musk tweeted about it, and the price went down, so we got out.
Yeah. It's too late to short it after he speaks.
Yeah, well, you could still short it. I think there's a ways more to go. I mean, I still don't understand what value there is in digital currency.
It's in the eyes of the beholder.
Exactly. I mean, unlike gold and silver and platinum and other precious metals, at least it has other uses. But in digital, you know, with digital currency, and then there's always the threat of nations and governments that are not going to like not being able to control the money. They have to control the money to control the people.
Yeah, witness China today.
Yep, it seems like there's been about one a week lately that's been cracking down.
Oh, and then there's going to be the United Kingdom. Oh, and here's, you got a second, Greg? I'll read you a little something.
Yeah.
You're talking about scam coins. Check this one out. There are 27 trillion in circulation. There's an unlimited supply cap. Only one node. 25% of the supply was minted in the last 6 months. 1% of holders own 30% of the supply. You know what the name of that one is?
No, I don't. Go ahead.
They call it the U.S. dollar. 25% of U.S. dollars were minted in the last 6 months.
That's crazy.
Oh, man.
Now, what about inflation? What's the definition again? Too many dollars chasing too few goods and services? Is that?
Yeah, exactly.
And Milton Friedman said it best.
I was at our local Lowe's today. A 4x8 3/4-inch plywood is $70.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy.
So how many reasons did you find that you didn't need one?
Well, fortunately, I was in the store for something else.
But, good.
I keep saying, you know, it might be worth my wife and I selling some gold and buying some lumber contracts because it's crazy.
Might be a little late. You never know.
Yeah, I'd be shorting him at this point.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I know. It's when they look like Eiffel Towers, that's the time to run.
Exactly
but,
right.
Let me take a stab at your question.
Absolutely.
So, Instagram bought by Facebook, I think, because I lived in the Bay Area at the time, I think they had roughly 13 employees.
13 employees, and you sell your company for $1 billion? That's outrageous.
Not a bad deal.
It's also true.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Good for you. You have a good memory because that was 9 years ago. I was blown away. You talk about a low overhead operation. Huh?
Yeah.
I love it. So
now even at $1 billion, that was probably, I mean, looking back, you got to say that was a heck of a deal for Facebook.
I hope he took a lot of it in Facebook stock and he's worth a lot more than $1 billion.
Yeah, it's worth a lot more.
Yeah.
Well, that was excellent. I think last week's action in the markets is interesting. We just got to hope that the S&P and the Dow and the Nasdaq can stick, can stick it and keep it there. I've got an eye out for some false upside possibilities there. So, if they can stick it and stay above the 50-day and the 200-day, then we're all good.
Take a good look at the SPY, too. It is within spitting distance of a new high. So if we can get a close over that one this week, it'll be a very bullish sign for the market.
It has to be on volume, though. Otherwise,
right.
It's just limp.
Yeah, and you're going to have trouble with that part in summertime.
June, yeah. But it is in the middle of a long-term uptrend, and it's right in the middle. It looks fundamentally sound.
Yeah, it really does. All the charting looks really good for this market, so keep the faith. I'm going to put you on hold, and Lauren will pick up and get your address, and we'll send you a little something from Mr. Bales.
And keep your stops tight.
You got that right. Thanks, Greg. Isn't that incredible? Yeah, I've about blew my mind when I read that. This guy starts a company, builds it up to $1 billion value, and he's got 13 employees.
So that must have been pretty profitable to justify that $1 billion valuation, but I could see why. There's very little overhead. I mean, you've got a place, you need a space, you've got some computer equipment, some servers, and 13 salaries, and that's it.
That's a part of what's boding poorly for the future of jobs and people and education, all that stuff. So a lot of the technology and a lot of the things that are being produced today don't have the same labor input that they used to have. So people have to have a whole different set of skills And it's definitely going to catch up. We worried when I was young that robots were going to take all of our jobs and computers are going to take all of our jobs. And it didn't happen because we invented more and more the need for more data, for instance, the need for more analysis, the need for everything, because the company or country was prospering so much along with its people in the post-war era. But now you're starting to look out there, and there's some reasons to be a little bit leery about what's going to happen with all this.
I don't worry about that too much.
Well, you know, that's why you listen to a show or deal with a company that has an age perspective like ours, because on the things where I will tend to be more pessimistic, Adam is more optimistic, and I think both sides deserve to be listened to. I hope he's right, frankly. All right, we're going to take another short break and come back and talk about some other fun things. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we had a winner on our trivia. I think that I was so glad Greg called, and I was even much happier that he got it right, because the discussion surrounding that shows the true degree of amazement we all had. And, well, good morning, caller. Again, I don't have a name. My apologies.
No, the secret caller.
There we go.
It's Lane.
Hey, Lane.
Oh, hey. How you doing?
How you doing?
We're better than we ought to be.
There you go. Well, a couple of things.
Yeah, sure.
Saw a picture of a piece of plywood a couple of days ago, and not that great a piece of plywood, and it says, hey, I've got a piece of plywood, we'll trade for Ferrari. I know what I've got.
No lowball offers, guys, huh?
Yeah, exactly. This business of the eviction bans and that whole mess, is there any way that could be big enough to cause a blip on the economy anywhere? It seems like they're not doing much, and people are not paying rent. And how big does that have to get before it makes a difference?
Good question.
It is a good question.
I have not heard many stories about that actually happening. Now, I know it's happening, but there hasn't been a lot in the media or even anecdotally that I've heard about it. I know it exists, but I don't know the magnitude of the problem.
It doesn't fit the narrative
right
now. Things are supposed to be so good you don't need that right now, because the new administration,
yes, exactly,
of course, has solved all the economic problems the country ever had or will have.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's being downplayed. But if you're a landlord, I would imagine that you would be rather interested in that.
Definitely. And I know a lot of them are coming to an end, so
yep,
it'll be interesting to watch. My gut says it's not large enough to throw a major shock to the system, but but could we feel it? Yeah, I think it's possible.
Yeah.
You know, it could result in depreciation of real estate.
Yeah. I see a headline every now and again, and I was just curious. And it's kind of tough, because you like to encourage young people to go buy that rental property and make some money and have a good investment. But, you know, if they've gone out and mortgaged that thing and now they're not getting any income, could be tough on them. But I just don't know how widespread it is. So,
well, they say rents are rising super fast.
They are.
If you can collect it.
That is true.
So that's going to be a force that kind of offsets the fear factor, I think. But how do you tell if somebody's going to be gainfully employed in a market like this? Hard to say. And especially since you can't discriminate when you're renting anything anymore. Got to be real careful about that. But I do think you can still secure your credit, so to speak. But it's a darn fine question. We'll have to look around.
As a sheriff once told my wife, as they were throwing somebody out, next time look at their car, look at what they're wearing, and be very discriminated.
And check out if they've got an iPhone 9, 10, 11, 12. Oh, there were no 9s.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Certainly not in a, you know, we don't want to discriminate, but in terms of somebody who is obviously a deadbeat, I think some discrimination might be wise. Okay, last question.
Sure.
You mentioned that the money supply was basically printed in the last 6 months.
25%.
Now, the way money is cycled, right, I understand that. But are you also including the debt that's getting printed like crazy out of thin air?
You know, where I was reading this was not really a source of information or analysis. It was just sort of put together to be a cryptic type thing. And I'm not sure how they do that, but I'll take a look this week and see what components of the money supply they're talking about. Is it is happening very, very quickly. But it doesn't all have to be physical bills. In fact, very few of them are actually physical bills, as you know.
Yeah.
They're an inference on the balance sheet of the Fed and the Treasury. So,
and aren't we concerned as that grows?
Yes, very concerned, especially if when it starts to get into circulation. During the financial crisis, they printed trillions of dollars, but they didn't put them in circulation. They put them in bank reserves. So without circulation, there's no inflationary component to the money supply. But once it starts moving at a velocity more than one, and in the private sector, when it's really cooking, it's about 2.5, and then you're going to see some real, real pull on the pricings.
Right.
Interesting.
Yes,
good thinking
thank
today,
you, boy. Okay, take care.
All right, be good. Have a nice weekend.
Okay, bye.
Good morning. Again, I don't have a name yet. We're still working out some bugs on this, but who's calling, please?
James.
James, good morning. What's on your mind?
I've got a question. A friend and I were talking this morning. He's 2 years older than me. He's 60 now. And I've got a Roth 401k with my company, and he's got a traditional 401k. And he was wondering, what would it take to roll his over into a Roth? Or is it possible, or what would be the penalties?
There is no penalty to do that.
A penalty in the traditional sense.
Yeah, it's all taxable immediately.
Yeah.
And
so, okay.
And his employer, they all have their own 401k plans, and it has to allow the Roth component in the 401k, which most do, but that's the first thing you have to check.
Not necessarily.
Right.
Not necessarily?
No. I mean, it's becoming more and more common to see a Roth option on 401ks, but plans, no.
Yeah, we have both. My company offers both.
That is becoming more and more common, but it's not everywhere yet. And, so to do that, if he does it all in 1 year, it is all immediately taxable to him in that year at his marginal tax rate. So if your friend's at the 22% tax bracket and he's at the lower end of that bracket, he could probably roll it all over and just pay the 22%. But the danger there is that it could actually push him into a higher tax bracket if it's large enough. So he might end up paying 24 or higher, depending on where he falls on that scale and how much is in the plan.
Yeah, it's a planning exercise, tax planning.
I'll let him know, just leave it where it is.
that's probably best.
Well, it's worth a real serious look, because you can play with your income and taxes on a computer or on paper and figure out what it's worth for that. For most people, a Roth 401k, to me, is not a good concept.
Oh, I disagree. I think it's a great
concept.
See,
there you go again. Yeah, that age difference.
I'm betting that the taxes will be lower now than they will when I retire. That's why I did that, and that's why I went with the Roth.
One of the common arguments, and right now, I got to admit, tax rates are pretty darn reasonable.
There's some other good arguments for that, James. One being the RMDs are not necessary with the Roth, so you've got that.
They are in 401k.
But you can roll
it
out.
You can roll it out of there to a Roth IRA.
Right. And then you, and also for, if I'm your kids or whoever it is that's going to inherit that money, I love getting the Roth.
Dad.
Yeah.
I believe it.
It's very true.
Yeah.
I do think that everybody is in a unique enough situation that having a good planning session with or without a good financial advisor is well worth your time and effort to do so, because you might discover some things. Also, I do not recommend.
I'm getting to the point where I'm going to have to.
Yeah, well, we would love to hear from you. But I'm at the point where I'm kind of hesitant when people get really close to Social Security to Medicare, because if you bump yourself up too high in your income because of that Roth conversion, you're going to pay for that through Medicare for a good solid year, and it's not inexpensive.
They're not at the age right. range yet. But
no,
yeah,
that's why I say if you're going to do it, I would look. I love being in your 50s to do it because you can clear that out of your system by 65. So
right.
if you're going to do it, it's a good time to look at it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Well, anytime. I appreciate the call. Thanks so much. That's one of the more complicated questions. Anything to do with the Roth and the conversion and the contribution.
There's so many factors that go into that decision.
You can split them. And, you know, one thing is planning your current income and taxes. It's another thing to plan your future taxes and withdrawals.
Right. And if you don't need to take the money until much later or at all, right. then you really might want to look at that strategy because you will be able to roll it to a Roth IRA and not have to take RMDs and not pay those taxes.
Right, but if you look at a couple of things, something called IRMA, I-R-M-A-A, which is the income adjusted monthly amount for Medicare people, you'll see that the limits of income that bump you up into the IRMA payments on top of your Medicare, they move really sort of quickly. So if you have an unlimited or a limited but large windfall on some occasion, which I talked about actually last week, and there's a blog on our website, BanwayFinancial.com, about that sudden bump in income and how many ways it can bite you. So, all right, always fun. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back same time next week. Have a wonderful weekend. This is the Banway Financial Hour.